Down to Business with Bobby Kerr.
Brought to you by Bank of Ireland
on News Talk.
So let's take a look at those business stories of the week and indeed the weekend. I'm delighted to joined by Louisa Meehan of Woodview HRM and John Isle, Deputy Business Editor with the Sunday Times. Good morning to you both. You're both very welcome.
Good morning.
Good morning, Bobby.
John, we might start with you. It's kind of the best kept secret of the world. The budget, we seem to, it's now August. The budget isn't till October, but we seem to know pretty much verbatim what's inside it.
That's right, Bobby. There's a very detailed story by Jennifer Bray in the Irish Times, which really lays out most of the sort of main tax measures that people are going to be focused on. The spending stuff tends to get a little less interest. I think people care most about their personal taxation. And what I'm taking away from this is that what we're getting is a political, not an economic budget. This is really aimed at the sort of middle class, middle of the road voters that Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil really need to capture and bring back on side in order to perform well in the upcoming election, you know, which is going to happen at some point before the end of the first quarter next year. Just to point out a few of the details here, what we're looking at, and none of this is really a surprise, but mainly cuts in personal taxes, income tax and USC. We're going to move the bands. According to this reporting, there'll be a widening of the inheritance tax, which is good news.
Well, that's a vote getter.
Exactly. Anyone who's expecting to, say, get a house in their future. But then some surprises, too, like the extension of further energy subsidies as part of a cost of living tax package, which to me seems a little...
I'm surprised that's OK with the EU. Isn't that one of the things they have a problem with?
Exactly. They don't like it. And neither does the central bank governor, Gabriel McClough, or the fiscal council. Right. So one thing to point out, I think, about the direction this budget seems to be going is that it's contrary to one, EU fiscal policy, and number two, European Central Bank monetary policy, which is working in the opposite direction.
Sure.
So we'll be loosening the interest rates in the coming months. There'll be cuts in September, most likely, possibly another one in December, at the same time that the government is doing an expansionary budget. They really should be going in the opposite directions. This has been pointed out by economists over the last 2 years, that the Irish budgets are moving against or working against monetary policy. The government obviously is saying, well, look, we want to put money back in people's pockets. We kind of don't care about the larger policy question.
Yeah, I know, but it's same old, same old. We've seen this before. Louisa, as I said, it's now August. What are we going to talk about between now and October if we know everything that's in the budget?
Well, I mean, if we talk about how much we're going to, or where we're going to spend all the money we're going to get, I think we'll be done talking. I think, as John is saying, that this is really a little bit for everybody, particularly those who can vote, but not a lot for anybody. They are talking about increasing some of the social welfare payments by, you know, there's varying amounts, but somewhere in the region of around 12 euros seems to be where they're falling on, which is good because people who are in social welfare, potentially, you know, pensioners, people who are carers, etc., need that money. And there seems to be a focus on that. There does seem to be a look at the cost of living and trying to have a cost of living package. The one last year was around 2.7 billion. They're looking at the one this year being smaller in scale, but trying to make the cost of living increases easier for people who are running it. One of the areas that I suppose there seems to be less talk about is around childcare. There's another 25% cut in the average cost of childcare due next month. So there doesn't seem to be a lot of pressure coming on the government to do any further cuts.
That might increase as we get back to September and kids start going back to school.
Once the 25% is in, they still have time to October, so you never know. Look, I think for me, and we were talking about this in the lead-in, I think for me it's they're playing around with the money that they're taking off us and what they're giving back to us. But I would love to see a shift towards investment. You know, the shift towards giving free school books up to Leaving Cert, great. What else can we do for education? How can we support people to be educated? How can we support our healthcare system? How do we improve the roads, the transport and all of those things?
Yeah.
That's not coming out.
Yeah, and as John said, it's that's not what really people want to talk about. It's about, you know, what's in it for me?
Yeah.
What's in it for me now?
Look, I
and where do
me,
I sign?
Like, the inheritance tax for me, I have a moral issue with inheritance tax. I don't really love it. Outside of the super rich, I think, you know, your parents pay tax on all of their money and then you have to pay more tax and then people have to move out of family homes and all kinds of horrible things happen. So I think that shift back, and it isn't even moving back towards what it was pre the banking crisis.
I think it used to be 525
exactly.
or something.
Exactly. So this is an improvement, bringing it up to around 400,000. It's moving it in the right direction. So from a moral perspective, I think that's the right thing to do.
Yeah.
But there's sort of a lot in it and not a lot in it.
Yeah, and I suppose I'm less enthused as well. I really feel for the hospitality industry. They're going through absolute turmoil at the moment, and it looks like their claims around reduction in VAT from 13 to 9 seem to be falling on deaf ears.
That's right. It is a very thin, I mean, at least considering what has been trailed so far ahead of the budget, right? This may change coming up to October 1st, but you're right. There's very little in it there if you're an SME owner that you'll look at that and say, I feel supported by this government. And I have to say, I'm really surprised by that because Fine Gael has made a big show, especially of being the party of enterprise.
Sure.
And they haven't exactly backed it up. There's been a kind of a rotation of ministers in the department that haven't really kind of dug into the detail there. Obviously, the Department of Finance and public expenditure roles get a lot more attention around budget time. But businesses are dealing with, especially SMEs, rising costs over the last few years, really since post-COVID. And they've been asked to take on the burden of a lot of the government's social policies by paying more in minimum wages, taking on
pensions,
extra sick leave. Yeah. New pensions are coming up. I mean, we'll see if that actually happens by January. I have my doubts whether mandatory pensions will happen on time. But you're really asking businesses not just to take on actual financial costs, but huge administrative burdens as well, which take time and money to implement all these new policies. And there's very little in terms of relief that we've seen coming through in what's being talked about in the budget. And I wonder if that will change by October 1st, because there is a lobbying effort underway at the moment among various business constituencies to kind of get those items on the agenda.
I think you're dead right. Louisa, let's move to the global shares reverse shock losses from the start of the weekend. And we saw this last Monday, global shares absolutely tanking.
Yeah.
Most of it has been made back, Hugh Jones tells us in the Irish Independent. But this is all linked to AI.
It is. And I think, as you say, what we saw on Monday was, you know, if anybody watches the stock markets or Bloomberg, as I'm subjected to at home a lot, there was a significant drop on Monday that was kind of scary. And if it had continued, it would have been very scary. But it has come back and it's stabilised and it has balanced. So what we've seen across the majority of the stock exchanges is that they're kind of back to where they were at the beginning. Not quite there, but certainly going in the right direction. And in the second story by Donal O'Donovan, what we're talking about there is the AI piece. And I think that's even more interesting because they were focusing on the AI boom that came, sort of like the tech boom that's come before it. And what they're saying is that some of the expectations, they're not going away, but they're softening. And what they mean by that is that the money that's due to come in will come in more stably and more consistently over a prolonged period. And what that allows for is a better level of investment, better decisions, more considered education, training, jobs, everything. And from an Irish perspective, when we are so heavily reliant on the tech sector and on AI businesses, it's seen as a really positive thing. And I think whilst it might mean that, you know, you can't invest €1,000 and end up with 100 grand next year, but it does mean that the economy looking forward over the medium to longer term is more stable. And that is only ever a good thing.
John, a couple of things around this. The bounce back is interesting. Sometimes it can be quite cyclical in the summer, this time of year.
Yeah.
It can get sort of distorted stuff in the markets. But, you know, is it telling us that AI stocks were hugely overvalued?
Yeah, and I think they were overbought, right? So something interesting preceded this. You might remember last week, and I don't know if you talked about it last Saturday, was that Warren Buffett had reduced his position in Apple, right? So this is Berkshire Hathaway's big position in Apple. I think they were the biggest shareholder. And he moved into cash. I think he's has his biggest cash pile in history, $277 million dollars in cash he's sitting on. And I think a lot of people looked at that and said, what does Warren know that the rest of us don't? And there was a bit of a wobble, you know, for technical reasons, because US and Japanese rates are going in different directions and so forth. But I think also you'd seen so much of the market had been driven by the Magnificent Seven, the big tech stocks, had driven so much of the gains of the year. You were bound to see a pullback. And it's not a surprise that it happened in August when stocks are thinly traded. There's not a lot of liquidity in the market. It's junior people are on the desk in the stockbrokers and investment banks. September trading will be the real litmus test. And I think we'll get a better sense of where the market is going to settle after we finally get the first US rate cut. of this cycle, reinforced by probably an ECB rate cut as well, which will give a lot of comfort, I think, to investors that the sort of their expectations about the economy are correct.
Okay. Well, I have you there. Ireland's imbalanced economy is a cause for concern. Some of the stats in this, and this is a Cantillon piece in today's Irish Times, it's only two columns. It's a small article. But by God, the information in it is eye-watering.
That's right. It's the same old problem, I think, with the Irish economy, which is that a huge portion of it, or a huge portion of the important parts of it, are driven by a small handful of multinationals. And so some of the eye-popping figure here is that there are 12,000 companies, or nearly 12,000 companies in this country, that are exporting goods, sending them to foreign markets. But just five of those companies account for nearly half of everything that is sold abroad. And that's the usual ones like Apple, Google, Microsoft, Facebook, etc., right? So we know about the over-reliance on there. But what I find alarming here is that it's the underdevelopment of the indigenous domestic economy.
Yeah.
And one way to measure that is, are Irish companies breaking into foreign markets? Now, there's a kind of a caveat here with these statistics, which is that I would like to see, and maybe the CSO does put this out at some point, is how indigenous companies are benchmarked against themselves. So year on year, are they expanding? Are they breaking into new markets?
Yeah.
How do they compete against?
I think you're right. That would be useful information in the context.
It's not exactly fair to compare a small Irish startup to Google.
Yeah.
I don't really see how that's a very valuable contribution. But to understand how the multinational sector is really the boss of this economy, I think is very important to know. And again, it comes back to that tax issue and what supports are in the budget for Irish small businesses. If companies that are growing here never have a hope of becoming, let alone as big as Google or Facebook or any of those big companies, but just competitive on a global scale, we have to re-examine exactly how we're growing companies here.
Yeah. Louisa?
Look, I think John makes a valid point. And as a small business owner, I know that the local enterprise offices and Enterprise Ireland provide a huge amount of support and resources to smaller businesses to go international. Now, what those numbers are and statistics, I don't know. And I would agree. I think, you know, 60% of our corporation tax receipts are coming from just 10 large enterprises, most of which are multinationals. Now, we need to take that money and we need to use it for the indigenous businesses in this country and for the companies that will never leave, and support the economy in a more stable way. But it does show that Ireland is still seen as a very positive economy for a lot of these tech and pharmaceutical industries in particular to invest in. And they're staying here and they have stayed here for a long time. You know, when I was doing my degree, and that was a very long time ago, I'm not going to say when, you know, foreign direct investment was what we were talking about. And it's still here. And that's, you know, at least two decades ago.
Yeah.
So,
but the last line in this article says, but as the Intel jitters show, we'd be foolish to take our current economic success for granted.
Absolutely.
That's the key line for me.
But at the same time, Bobby, we have to point out, and I think this is the point Louise is making, which is that the FDI policy has been a resounding success.
It's
something the government set out to do, which is attract these big companies and help them contribute. I mean, those corporation taxes are paying for our income tax cuts that are coming in October, right? So I do think we have to say this has been a successful policy that has created maybe a small problem, a small solvable problem.
And I also think they're more, and when we talk about these businesses, they're more intertwined in us. It's in fact, it's not that easy to up sticks and say, we're going to another economy.
Well, who wants to leave Ireland when they come here?
Why would they leave?
What about FBD, John, some profits out, down on last year for the first 6 months. Interesting that the company talking about 2/3 of their average premium increase in the period related to customers increasing their insurance cover and changing business mix rather than higher prices. I find that hard to believe.
Well, yeah, I mean, they don't want to say we're jacking up prices because we're trying to gouge our customers, Bobby. But what's interesting here, it's always interesting looking at FBD. They're the only indigenous insurance company, right? And insurance is a very good barometer for what's happening in the economy. So two things to point out. The top line is growing. The revenue is going up, partly because of premiums, partly because they're capturing more customers. But they're having lower profits despite a good performance. And that's because there's a higher cost of claims. It costs more to fix a car now. It costs more to, say, rebuild a damaged house after a weather event, but also their operating costs have gone up because they're having to pay their staff more,
yeah.
which is true for every business. But they're also investing in their business as well. So that cuts their overall profits. But what's interesting here from a shareholder perspective is the company is really performing in terms of dividends.
Mm-hmm.
Since the end of the pandemic, FBD has been spraying cash all over the place, and their shareholders are very happy because they have an annual dividend, they get special dividends. All these cash distributions are very nice for anyone who owns stock in FBD.
Yeah, and the special dividend to shareholders for €1, there's 40 million of them. That's 40 million euros.
Exactly.
Louisa, this is an interesting proposition as told to us by Patrick Smith in today's Irish Times. The plan to make billionaires pay more tax is gaining support globally. Tell us more.
So this is looking at the G20 countries, and what they're doing is they're trying to get an international agreement in terms of billionaires paying tax. So rather than any one country doing it alone, because then we all know that billionaires disappear, trying to get an agreement across all of the countries that the billionaires will pay tax. There's some really interesting statistics in here.
Well, the first one is that there's 3,000 of them.
There's a lot of them.
Billionaires.
There's a lot of them. And we have a few here in Ireland. We have 11. And given the size of this country, that's not bad. So this is a chap called Gabriel Zuckman, who is the Parisian economist, director of Think Tank for the European Tax Observatory, specialising in international tax, just to say who it is. And he's been asked to do some research into how do we tax billionaires. And he's looking at it in terms of the shift around corporation tax globally, where we've become a little bit more consistent in relation to that. And what he's saying is that with billionaires, if all of the G20 countries are taxing their billionaires, then we can create potentially $250 billion in tax. From an Irish perspective, with our little 11 billionaires here, he's potentially looking at that being in the region of
$1 billion,
which is not bad. I'm
at
okay
a rate
with that.
Of 2%. Mm. It is interesting, John, because I suppose, like the stats, as this economist seems to articulate too, seem to indicate that the richer you are, pro rata, the less tax you pay.
Exactly right. And going back to Warren Buffett, he's pointed this out too. You know that the overall tax rate, I think, of his personal assistant was higher than his, because of course, when you're a billionaire, your money tends to be in assets rather than in cash.
Yeah.
It's not
yeah.
the income bit. And I think that's the challenging part here. And we saw this when the OECD tried to create universal rules across the globe for how corporations would be taxed, to eliminate tax competition, to get a global minimum tax level of 15%, and also to more fairly distribute where those taxes were being collected. It was really arduous to get countries to agree on the principles, but then it is even harder on an individual country basis for each country to agree. And the US is the one that's currently slowing this up at the corporate level to get countries to agree. Well, how are we going to implement this, right? So if we did this, right, global wealth is mobile, as Louisa pointed out. It moves around. If you don't like how you're being taxed in Ireland, you'll move it to Malta, you move it to Portugal. However, the principle, I think, is a sound one, which is that massive wealth accumulation on the scale of billionaires actually drains resources away from society at large. Yep. And if you can kind of move it around like that, these people aren't being properly taxed at the rate that normal people who can't hide their assets yep. are being taxed, right? So the principle is sound. As always, it will be the implementation. How do you capture this stuff? And then once you've captured it, how do you make sure it's actually
spent properly?
Properly spent, exactly. And yeah. it doesn't just become a piggy
bank. If you're one of these billionaires, it's bad enough having to give up your 2%. But if you thought it was going to be squandered or, you know, not used properly,
exactly.
I think you'd have a valid argument against it. Let's move to the States, John. We'll ask Louisa her views first.
Yep.
On the come at the hour, come at the woman, Kamala Harris can win the White House, according to Colin McCann in today's Independent Review.
Yeah, look, I actually think this is an article worth reading. There's some really lovely quotes and phrases in here. The general gist of it is, the Democrats were slumped in a corner with Biden there. The door was locked, the windows were sealed, and along comes Kamala, The windows are open. The light is coming in and she's giving a fresh ray of hope. And I know if I look at just my own household, we're a little bit split. My husband thinks she won't win. I think she will win. At least I hope desperately that she wins. And I do think we see an energy, and we used this word when we were talking earlier. She's normal. She's a normal person.
Yeah.
Who has worked really hard to get to where she's got to, who has solid education and experience, and so she might actually win.
One of the kind of striking things, and it's pointed out in McCann's article, is that, you know, she was always there, John. Mm. Maybe Biden suppressed her slightly, but she wasn't seen as somebody who basically tried to push him out, given that. And, you know, it also points out now that even though she was always there and we knew her, she's just been given this oomph now. Mm. And this, the wind seems to be at her back. Trump looks old. Mm. But there's only 12 weeks here to go. What are your thoughts?
Well, I'm glad it's only 12 weeks, right? I mean, who isn't sick of American politics at this point, Bobby? What's interesting to me, I mean, you mentioned there how she was always there, right? But timing is everything. When she ran her primary campaign for the 2020 election, it was ineffective. She didn't connect with voters. She didn't have the sort of rhetorical pizzazz that she seems to now possess. And I think people wanted something a bit more reassuring. And that reassuring person was Joe Biden, right? But what changed for Joe Biden in 4 years is that he's no longer reassuring. And we all saw in his debate performance that actually we were facing a kind of political abyss in the U.S. And the choice was between the Republican freak show and an aging Biden who didn't seem able to take advantage of the political opportunity in front of him. Now Kamala Harris, who is able to deliver a lot more energy, a lot more confidence, a lot more poise. And then we have to point out also her vice presidential pick, I think, was just perfect. Absolutely perfect. Right? There's a bit of controversy about how it happened and, you know, who should have been in consideration.
This is Tim Walz.
This is Tim Walz, yes.
Yeah.
But he's like, again, a resoundingly normal governor of Minnesota.
He's a bit of a sense of humor.
Yeah, he has sense of humor. He has a light touch. He's like, he talks like a normal person. I mean, people are calling him sort of America's dad, right? So he sort of presents the way Joe Biden did when Barack Obama picked him in 2008. And he kind of has that like, that sort of comforting normality. He's very focused on policy as well and has a number of policy achievements as governor of Minnesota. He's very well liked in his home state. He doesn't seem to have a lot of baggage behind him. He was a school teacher. He was a football coach. He goes hunting in the fall. Like he's kind of a standard American dude.
Right.
And I think everyone is kind of looking at that and saying, oh, yeah, we can still kind of produce politicians who aren't a kind of
men of the people.
Yeah, it's not a circus anymore.
Yeah.
And for me, I mean, I was over in Canada the last 2 weeks, so exposed to a lot of U.S. media while I was over there. And just the vibe shift from previous visits was actually enormous. And
it's huge,
kind of
isn't
people
it?
Are like really very interested in what Kamala Harris can bring in November.
Okay, finally then, we've had a great Olympics. I'm going to be talking to some of the Sport Ireland people in the second hour of the programme. But both editorials, Louisa, in the Independent and indeed in the Irish Times, they give us a kind of an analysis of our success. And I think it's really, really, it's really, really nice to see.
Look, it's been glorious. There's a lovely sentence here in the Irish Times. Wonder and admiration may not have replace cynicism and anger, but they have highlighted how sporting achievement has a special ability to lift our spirits. And it's focusing in here, you know, there's a lot going on. There's riots, there's political unrest, there's lots of things happening across Europe. And yet we have these Olympic Games. Irish sports people have gone from across an array of different sporting activities, and they've come home with gold medals or almost with gold medals. And there is joy and there is fun and there is connection and there has been investment. And we see a new Ireland represented at these Olympics, and it really is phenomenal. And I loved seeing Kelly Harrington after her second win, and you know, she's a world record holder in terms of winning two Olympics back to back, the first Irish woman ever to do so, and singing Grace afterwards. It's just a phenomenally Irish thing to do.
Okay, we'll have to leave it there. Thanks to my guests, Louisa Meehan of Woodview HRM, John Isle, Deputy to Business Editor with the Sunday Times. As always, great to talk to you both. Enjoy your weekend.
Down to Business with Bobby Kerr.
Brought to you by Bank of Ireland.
Saturday morning at 11 on News Talk.